all for staying for the Q&A. What an absolutely amazing film, and how timely and relevant in our times right now with the current crisis that we're currently having. Please join me in welcoming the director of this amazing film, Mr. Robert Kenner.
Thanks so much. It's very exciting to get to see the film with an audience. I want to introduce someone that was so important into the making of this film, whose book, Fast Food Nation, was such a seminal book. Not only that, he was such a generous person and so helpful, Eric Schlosser. Maybe I'm going to introduce a few more people that were so instrumental, all the other filmmakers who've come out to Toronto. My composer, Mark Adler, if you could stand up. Cinematographer, Richard Pierce. My executive producers, Jeff Skull, Diane Wireman, Robin Shore, our researchers, Sasha Goldmore, my fabulous producer, Elise Perlstein, come on out. Elise verified every statement in this film. We had to find two or three sources to back up every sentence in this film. I wish my attorney, Victor Kovner, our First Amendment attorney, were here. I've never been so involved in working with an attorney before. But anyway, I thank you. You know, when we started out, we actually thought that we were going to make a film about how do we eat. And we were hoping to be able to interview not only the Joel Saladins of the world, but the food industrial food makers to understand their point of view. We naively thought we would be allowed in to photograph and to hear their opinions, and it turned out to be rather naive. It was unfortunate because we really wanted to hear their side of the story. What we found was this was a system that had become so consolidated, there were so few companies that controlled the food that we ate, and they were so connected to government that they could really stop us from looking in, stop us from hearing what was happening. And it was when we met, and was when I was filming with Barbara Kowalczyk, and she told me she couldn't actually tell me how the food, you know, how it's changed, how she eats, that I realized this was a film about much more than food. So anyway, thanks. And should we ask some questions? Or if Eric, I don't know if you want to say anything. Whoa.
This microphone was made by Monsanto. I want to say this is a very brave filmmaker, as well as a very gifted one. This film is about the United States, so of course none of it applies to Canada whatsoever. But for me, as Robbie said, this film really isn't about food. And I was, as I was watching it today, I was thinking a different title, and I really like this title, but a different title could just be Power, Corruption, Lies. And you know, this is what happens when you have concentrated power. It doesn't matter whether it's concentrated power in a government or in corporations. No company should control 90% of a basic crop like soybeans. And it doesn't matter if Mother Teresa were running Monsanto. They shouldn't have that power. And this is how companies behave when they have that sort of power. So I'm very proud to have been involved in this. And if Robbie, you know, has any legal problems, he'll be able to find me in New Zealand. Anyway, but any questions you have?
Maybe we could turn up the house lights.
Hi. What's the white release, the aggressive white release strategy for the
We'll tell you in a few days.
Hello. I was just wondering what inspired your individual interest in the sort of industrial food movement in America.
I'm sorry, I couldn't quite hear. Well, I was initially inspired by Eric's book, which Fast Food Nation, which I thought was really wonderful, and then read Michael Pollan's book, Omnivore's Dilemma, and I thought it would be an interesting conversation to understand how we are able, you know, to feed the world, and I thought that seemed like an interesting premise to go at. Unfortunately, the movie kept shifting due to certain people's lack of interest in talking with us.
And I guess in my case, it was because I'd been eating this food all my life, and I realized once I started the reporting for Fast Food Nation that I had no idea where it was coming from or how it was being made, and that this was not an accident, and that they deliberately don't want you to know. And so my instinct as a person, I think that's why I'm the kind of writer I am, is if somebody really doesn't want you to know, then I kind of have to know. So that was my, but Fast Food Nation as well really wasn't about food or fast food. It's about, you know, changes in American society that unfortunately are being brought to this country as well as many other countries.
I wanted to ask you specifically about the big business move towards organics, and with small companies like Stony Brook selling out to Danone, what does that bode? Are they going to come towards organic, or is organic going to be dumbed down for them?
Well, I think, as Gary says, the jury's out. I think Stonyfield, all of these organic companies are being bought up. There's the same consolidation in the organic world that you see in the meatpacking world and the Monsanto world. Hopefully, on one hand, a lot of chemicals will be taken off our planet. But hopefully, there'll still be honest, fair food. At the Slow Food Nation event last weekend, Eric said he's not sure he wants to eat an organic heirloom tomato if it's been picked by slave labor. So I think we have to watch out for that. We need fair food, and we all have to sort of fight to make that happen. And I think Eric's point that we were able to change smoking laws, hopefully we can do the same with food.
Well, I really like Gary, who runs Stonyfield Farm, and I think he's sincere. But, you know, on the one hand, Walmart has the power overnight to eliminate tons of pesticides or to eliminate a growth hormone from our system. And if Walmart's, you know, going to do good things, I think that's wonderful. But I don't think there should be any one corporation with that amount of power. And if you have a truly competitive marketplace, then, you know, you have lots of firms competing on price and on qualities, and that's what we don't have in one industry after another, including the film industry. So I think competition is a very good thing, but when you talk about corporate organic, you know, describes what went into the soil, which is important, but there are other traits in our food that we want, such as no slave labor, how are the workers treating, is it local, is it done in a sustainable way. So, you know, food is an important subject that people need to educate themselves about because it has profound implications for those who eat it, for your family, for your society, and for too long we've just been the victims of the marketing and not applying critical thinking to this really important subject.
Hi,
Yeah. We've heard in Denmark that you're basically paid bonuses to produce healthy food. There are all these codes that go on the food, and the sort of the more nutritious it is. I'm not sure. Yeah.
Well, particularly with food safety, that the plants that have the least number of contaminants and everything get bonuses. So it's kind of a separate, an opposite system.
You refer to hidden costs in this film, and it's about costs in health, people getting sick, that kind of thing. Has anyone done, or is anyone doing, a calculation that they can present to the American people on the cost of savings versus cost of healthcare, or well, not healthcare per se, but cost of medicine versus cost of savings?
You know, I don't know that it's been done in a systematic way in terms of, you know, the runoff from these factory farms is the leading cause of water pollution within the United States. So that's one environmental harm. But there's no question that the cost of obesity alone is higher now than the total revenues of the fast food industry. So we're talking about, you know, costs to society that aren't measured in the billions or the tens of billions, but into the hundreds of billions of dollars. So, you know, the point of Fast Food Nation, the point of this film, the point of the omnivore's dilemma is really the same, that this cheapness is an illusion. It's only cheap when you buy it. It's not so cheap when you have the dialysis 30 years later or 15 years later.
I just wanted to say, in Baldwin Park, where we filmed that teen health advocacy group, two things. One is they could not believe that Elise and I did not know anyone with diabetes. They had never met someone who did not have members of their family or their friends who had diabetes. And also, when we walked around, we saw numbers of dialysis centers, but no supermarkets to help feed them, just fast food restaurants.
Bon appetit.